And welcome back. All right, there's a lot going on, and there will always be a lot going on with respect to the horrible repercussions of this most vicious, brutal bioweapon unleashed on humankind. For the rest of our lives, and as long as the lives of those who have been injected are concerned, things are going to be difficult or far worse. The loads in the hospitals, we're going to talk about that in this hour as well, are nonstop, maxed out in many cases, and I suspect at least in the Western world, and that includes Canada, New Zealand, Australia, the U.S., Western Europe, for the most part. But I think in other areas of the planet, they're having similar problems. We're not getting that information. If any of you have anything like that, to talk about hospital loads in India, China, Indonesia, wherever. It would be interesting to know South Africa, South America. I'd like to know about that too. But I suspect that wherever these injections have gone, nothing but death, suffering, and misery are in its wake. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Oh, thank you. I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm not good. I try.
I've well, never let's been pretend.
Good. All right. Well, there's always that. Okay, so I think what we should do is start with iron. Now, for those of you who are new to the program, understand that it's kind of a hot ticket item, getting infused with iron now. There's a lot of anemia fear out there. It's certainly apparently being reflected in some of the blood work and some of the panels, the tox screens that are coming back, all of it. But as Erica has been extremely and exceedingly clear about, you don't want to add iron to your body. Not in these times. If you understand how the spike protein works and what it does to the red blood cells, it kicks off the iron, separates it from the heme, and the iron goes running loose in the body. You don't want metals like that running loose in the body just for openers, but iron is a bad one. And we've made this abundantly clear for a long, long time. Now, Erica joined a group last week. I think it's a couple of them. One of them, anyway, had to do with people who were worried about their iron, thinking that they were somehow deficient in iron. And it has jumped to extraordinary numbers, this group, and people are just flipping out over iron. And they're doing it, it's ass backwards is what's happening. They're worried about the wrong things. So bring us up to date, if you would, because a lot of you out there may go to a doctor and get a normal blood test, blood evaluation, and they're going to say, well, your iron's low. Not necessarily a bad thing. Okay? All right. Go ahead.
Well, as we know from the virus, the virus can impact the red blood cell. It can attack the heme and cause the iron to be released from the heme. And then the iron goes very high, followed shortly by the ferritin, which is the storage form of iron. These vaccines, so-called vaccines, seem to be doing something similar with the iron. The inflammation in and of itself is enough to cause the body to activate its iron withholding defense mechanism, where it will sequester iron in organs and tissues, primarily the macrophages, your white blood cells, and your liver to start, but then other organs and tissues can become loaded with iron too, in order to keep iron away from a pathogen. Whether it's a virus or bacteria, most of these opportunistic microbes need iron to grow and proliferate. So people are feeling the effects of not having adequate iron in their blood, and the knee-jerk reaction is to just go out and take an iron supplement. The problem with that is when this iron withholding defense is activated, you can't absorb iron from your intestines. I mean, your body's just preventing that. And then people resort to overriding that natural defense, and they're going for infusions.
Describe an infusion for us, just for our listeners' sake.
Well, you're importing the iron directly into the bloodstream.
It's like an IV drip, but you're getting iron, okay?
Yep. Right. We'll do a couple of these readers here. It's clear that these are not having the desired effect, probably because this iron withholding defense mechanism is in force. But I've never seen so many people floundering on this topic, and I think many of them don't have the benefit of having a doctor to consult with, a specialist, I would say, in this case. And
right.
It's really unfortunate.
They can't even get into doctors. They can't, and a lot of doctors are not up to speed on iron in the body.
No.
They can't go to an ER and get any. All they're going to do is get a blood screen, if they get anything, and they might have to wait 24 hours for that. Literally waiting physically in the ER. Seriously. This is not a joke. And you're going to come back with your iron's low. So what are you going to do? You're not going to get any guidance. Well, you have to think about it. We'll talk more, but you might want to take an iron supplement. Good luck. You're loading your body with... If you've been vaxxed, you are literally loading your body with explosives. This could be real bad.
Yeah, it's an issue of regulation. It's not really, in most cases, I won't say all the time, but it's not really an issue of deficiency. But to make that determination, you do need blood tests to evaluate that, and then somebody that knows how to interpret them properly. But one of the groups I joined, it was just last week, had 85,000 members the day I joined it. It's now up to 90,000. And it hasn't even been a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there's a big panic out there. There's an iron panic building. It's obvious. And people are thinking,
the knee-jerk reaction is, if somebody's anemic, the tendency is to believe that it must be an iron deficiency. And we've gone over this. Iron is only one component of building red blood cells. You need copper. You need B12. You need folate. You need B6. And then there's some speculation. I don't know how tried and true this is, but it's believed that the spike protein can interfere with the porphyrin synthesis, the components you need to assemble heme. So if the spike is interfering with any one of those components, there's eight different enzymes that are required to build a heme molecule, then... you can take iron all day long and you're not going to build heme because there's something interfering with it.
I'm not knocking doctors, but I'll bet the average doctor would say, if you take iron, it's going to build red blood cells. That's what they'd say. They'll just say that.
Yeah.
That's kind of, in their world, a common sense linear thought that is valid. But no, that's not necessarily true. And you just got to be careful. There are actually people now who are getting blood draws. Well, it's like a donation. You can go to the Red Cross and do it, I guess, or any blood bank, to get rid of iron in their system. So you've got a paradox here that is going to be incredibly confusing to people. It already is. You've got 90,000 people in this group looking for guidance. And what are they going to get? Confusion. That's what they're going to get.
Yeah, typically they're experiencing a long list of symptoms that we're all very familiar with now. Fatigue, dizziness, ringing in the ears, abdominal pain, joint pain. Oh, gosh, the list goes on. And these are all symptoms that coincidentally cropped up in the last year, 2 years.
And, funny thing.
Yeah, how about that? But no one's really thinking it has anything to do with those experimental gene transfection injections they took.
No. It's after 2.5 years, and that's not the first thing that people should think about, and it's not. So
no, and that's...
The PSYOP has been an overwhelming success.
I've mentioned this before, that in pick any group, any kind of group that deals with a particular health issue, you name it, there's people coming into these groups all the time now with strange complaints, and they think they've got it figured out, so they join a group to see what people are talking about and if there's any help to be had. Right. And I would just think the first question should be, how many shots have you had? But nobody's talking about it.
No, that's the number one question that should be asked by any health practitioner, any uptaking nurse, any of them. How many shots have you had?
I honestly don't think conventional medical care is in a position to address what's happened to these people. I mean, they can provide symptomatic relief in the form of, I don't know, antidepressants.
They may have some symptomatic relief, but what are they first and foremost going to do? Run people through test after test after test.
Right.
Tens of thousands of dollars in tests, maybe more. I don't know how much they cost now. Well, we better get a scan. We better do this. They don't know. And even if they find symptoms, how are they going to diagnose when they will refuse to ask the question, how many shots have you had? They won't do it.
They don't want to go there.
Some doctors will. I don't want to say all. I never speak in absolutes, but very, very few. That's the first question. You have dizziness. You had a period for 6 months now. First question, how many shots did you have? Not asked.
Yeah, but they won't go there.
No.
You know, allopathic care has always been about managing symptoms, not finding the root cause and restoring the body to...
They don't go after the core.
No,
they don't. After the cause. They don't. It's not in their... It's not what they're taught. They're not taught. They're taught to go to Big Pharma and start writing prescriptions.
Yeah. So I feel bad for these people. There's so many of them.
That's a huge number. Now, by contrast, the group that Erica scans most is the shedding group. And I don't want to necessarily promote any group, but that's the one that we look at. And that is, as I think most of you regulars know, or at least you know that it's how we feel, that shedding is maybe the number one thing right now that people need to be concerned with, especially those who have not been vaxxed. For all you unvaxxed people out there, if you're not up to speed on shedding, you're really making a potentially terminal mistake. This is a huge part of the pie. When they built this thing, they cooked it up. Shedding was built into it. They knew it would be another way to vax people on the QT, so to speak. Passive vax. Shedding.
Oh, and there have been people that are literally debilitated from the shedding.
Correct. And that group ought to have 100,000 people in it. It doesn't. It's got around 20-ish in that neighborhood. But 90,000 now in this iron group?
Yeah, and that's just one of many, many, many iron anemia-related groups.
It's all really amazing. All right, well, we're going to talk about something else amazing now. All right, when the human body, the immunological system, when we used to have them commonly, comes into contact with an enemy, what does it do? It builds antibodies to go after the enemy, whether it's a bacteria, virus. Oh, excuse me, there are no such things as viruses, I forgot. There are many antibodies, countless antibodies, designed to go and do battle to cleanse the system of the invaders. Again, virus, bacteria, mold, yeast, fungus, I don't care, whatever it is. So antibodies are crucial to your body's performance, okay? When the spike protein gets into the body through injection or shedding, the body's immune system goes to war. It goes to war immediately. It starts producing antibodies to try to attack these bad proteins. The spike protein, the deadliest protein ever known to humankind. And what happens to the body's ability to regulate the amount of antibody production that it achieves and pours into the bloodstream to take it everywhere in the body. Antibodies. You can get too many antibodies in your body to go after the spike, for example. And this is the example we're citing here. Too many antibodies to go kill off the spike protein can cause trouble in and of itself. So what does the body do to take the number, the overall number of antibodies down to an appropriate level? Go ahead, pick it up from there.
Well, in some cases, if this is an ongoing production of antibodies, as would be when you have the persistent production
constant of
spike protein, right, the body will produce antibodies to bind up any extra antibodies that might be produced in response to this persistent production of antigen spike.
So you're all following this now? The body produces antibodies to go after the spike. It can produce too many because it's constantly under attack by the spike, so it's constantly producing antibodies to the spike, to the detriment of antibodies that might be needed for other things, by the way. It's all-consuming because the spike is that catastrophic. Okay.
So what you have then with an anti-antibody, they call it anti-idiotype antibody, you have the mirror image of the antibody, which, okay,
of
in the case
enemy
of the spike protein, you have something that looks like a spike, which is potentially biologically active in the same way that the spike is. So back in, was it January of, I think it was last year, there was a paper written, didn't get a lot of traction, I guess I'm not surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it? New England Journal of Medicine.
Yeah, go ahead.
The title of it is A Possible Role for Anti-Idiotype Antibodies in SARS-CoV-2 Infection and Vaccination, written by a William Murphy and Dan Longo.
Let me say one thing.
It.
Hold on. This is important. The body is producing an anti-antibody to try to give the enormous number of nonstop antibodies it's producing enough target material so it doesn't overwhelm and go crazy in the body. It's trying to balance out this constant production of antibodies that are going after the spike protein. So what does the body do? It produces something that literally mirrors the spike protein. Yes, that's what I just said. Your body is actually producing a spike protein mirror and turning it loose all over the body to try to give the antibodies it has also produced something to do with the excess number of antibodies. It's producing, apparently, spike proteins, your own body. This is mind-boggling.
Yep. Isn't it something? And just another facet of the destruction this thing can cause.
This is crazy. When you think about it, here's another major, huge discovery. We just had recently the plasmids. We figured out that they can go in there and cause E. coli and other bacteria potentially to produce mRNA instructions that'll transfect your cells just like a vaccine will, to make your cells produce spike proteins. All right. Well, now we have the body actually producing, let's just say, spike proteins. They're mirrors, but they're the same basic thing, apparently, according to this paper, which will go through your body and give the overwhelming attack your body is making against the spike more targets so it won't be imbalanced. It's trying to balance it out. Now, this is just, to me, absolutely over the top. And if you all don't think that the people who built these horror injections didn't factor into it, you better think again. They figured it all out. This is part of the game. They knew this was going to happen. So if the human body is actually producing these, go ahead.
I can only imagine the immune exhaustion that it will come from this
VADES,
process.
VADES. There's VADES.
I mean, mean, we are seeing that with a lot of these long haulers, and you can group in these vax injured people as well. They are becoming immune deficient in that they're losing some of their gamma globulins, the type of cells they use to produce antibodies, and in particular the IgM, which are short-term antibodies that are produced during acute infection. They're just depleted. So it leaves them wide open to all kinds of other opportunistic infections. You know, and that's just one arm of the immune system that's now been compromised.
AIDS. AIDS. Exhaustion. Immunocompromised to the max, so much so that your immune system is exhausted. You're exhausted. It just takes energy.
Well, and then we have, and we've mentioned this a few times, the reactivation of latent viruses, most notably in the herpes family. Those are the ones that, you know, once you get, you have for life. And if you're immune competent, you keep them in check. But then, you know, we've had the herpes simplex cases that result in Bell's palsy sometimes. Or Ramsey-Hunt, was that, I think that was a zoster virus. Or
so.
Shingles. And then we also have Epstein-Barr. Mm-hmm. That's a herpes virus. A lot of the long haulers and vax damaged are contending with that. And then the lesser talked about herpes viruses, which would be cytomegalovirus and human herpes virus 6, which was associated with HIV back in the day.
That was in my book, HHV6.
They thought that might be the culprit in AIDS initially.
They did.
These herpes viruses really do drain the immunological reserve of the host to the point where at some point you may actually start transcribing retroviruses, your own endogenous retroviruses, and that's when you start to see things like multiple sclerosis. And then to try to put them back in the bag, so to speak, it's an uphill battle.
I hope all of you understood what the point was about anti-antibodies. The anti-antibody is a mirror of spike protein. It is essentially a spike protein that your own body is producing. The people who conceived this death through a needle knew all this. It's just another aspect of how they designed this to accomplish their goal, which is population reduction. How can this be that they thought so many evil things and built them into this? And we don't even know all of it. We don't know. What we've discovered, what Erica looks at papers and does all of her research, we still don't know it all. There's much more. There's that one big protein that's actually bigger than a spike. We don't know what it does. But think
about
it.
Yeah, there's a lot of mystery. Mystery proteins.
Yes, into producing a spike.
But then there's, the other parts of the immune system that are targeted and disabled from this thing. It's
destroyed, disabled, ruined. Yes, VAIDS. Vaccine-induced AIDS. This is really horrific. And yet a lot of you will say, well, I see people out and they're out shopping and look normal, and they're not normal. Whether they feel it or not, whether it's clinical or subclinical, if they've been injected, there are things at work in their body that are going to lead them to some very grievous health crises. They're already there.
They're never
showing
mentioned
up in hospitals all the time now. We'll get to that in a minute. Go ahead.
The bodybuilder there, Joe Aesthetics, the German bodybuilder there that 30 years old, he passed away a week or two ago.
Not long ago. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say, there's a guy that looked like he was as fit as could be. There's no indication that he was in ill health of any sort, but he'd had four vaccines. and at one point had his blood looked at, and the doctor said, you need to get this stuff out of your system. So he was able to do a plasmapheresis two times, and that is about as thorough a cleaning of the blood as you could hope for to remove, mostly removes the proteins that are in the blood, the proteins that have accumulated. I mean, I don't know, maybe it removes other things. There were strange-looking things in his blood, and this plasmapheresis was intended to take care of it. And I don't know, maybe it did to a certain extent, and yet he still died.
At 30 years of age.
But looking fit as a fiddle.
Yeah, Lindner, L-I-N-D-N-E-R, Joe Lindner.
Right, that was it.
This is bad. That when he had his blood taken out, literally taken out from his body, cleaned and put back in twice.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get rid of the crap in his blood and the spike and all the rest. And I can't imagine a more dramatic intervention than that in terms of cleaning or attempting to clean. And it didn't do nothing.
No.
Nothing. He's gone. Anyway, that's I think, what was the total? How many bodybuilders have died in the last 2 years? It's a lot. It's, I don't know, 40, 50? Yeah, I ran a story the other day. Something like that, 40, 50. And these are people of note that, you know, in that business.
Yeah.
They were known, well known. All right, well, we must move on to the next issue. And that's, let me just, as a prelude to this, just for fun, haha. Erica monitors, and many of you monitor your local EMT, fire, and rescue dispatch. And you know that your EMTs are being called out, in all likelihood, quite often. And the same thing where Erica lives. I hear sirens more than I used to. There are a lot of things going on. Now, some of the calls are strange. They're odd. I don't know why people would call when they... Give us some examples. Some of the odd calls. What was... There was one...
Young child had a stomach ache.
That's right. A tummy ache. Okay. Tummy ache.
And then they got there and were they you know, they refused transport.
The parents did.
The only thing I can think of is the people that are making these calls. I mean, sometimes they're just people that are desiring of attention. You know, they're kind of addicted to attention sometimes. But in other cases, they don't have a vehicle to get themselves to a hospital. So
right. Well, the point I wanted to make was that that people are being transported, and when they get to a hospital, what are they finding there? They're finding wall-to-wall people who have already gone to the ER and they're waiting their turn. And this is all over the Western world. Remember, the Western world is the number one target of this first massive effort to depopulate the planet. And this was told to me over 5 years ago, that the quote was, "We are pulling the plug on the United States and the Western world." And that's what happened. Here's a story from Australia about the number one biggest hospital, which just went through over $1 billion remodeling and updating, I believe. Am I right? Wasn't that it? It was a huge amount of money they put in this hospital.
Anyway, I believe so.
Here's a quick story, 3 minutes or so, from Australia, just to give you an idea. And we know from Nurse Anne and her work in the 800-bed New York hospital that it's absolutely wall-to-wall people, stacked up, backed up, packed up. Here's what's happening in Australia.
Our health system in Sydney's west, the city's largest hospital, Westmead, at crisis point. Sick patients sleeping on the emergency department floor, others waiting days for treatment, and a whistleblower who says lives are at risk.
Days for treatment, days, plural, sitting in the ER, waiting around the clock to be seen and properly taken care of.
Right, The health department has said sorry.
A sick patient receiving fluid intravenously, sleeping for hours on Westmead Emergency Department's waiting room floor.
All right, just an image here I want to explain. There's a video of the waiting room, and there are people in chairs on the left, and on the right is somebody literally lying on the floor with an IV bag on a stand next to them, covered up with a sheet, completely covered up. Person is laying there with an IV, asleep, on the waiting room floor in the ER. It's amazing.
A picture captured at 5 a.m. on Saturday, May 13th, by another horrified patient, Josephine Lord, the Winston Hills grandmother herself, suffering a fever and having trouble breathing. Initial assessment found her sick enough to be admitted to hospital, but she spent more than 14 hours in the same area.
Sitting on a plastic chair, I couldn't believe I'd be seeing 3 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm thinking, I've been awake for nearly 24 hours. It's at that point that I'm thinking, am I in trouble here?
The overnight ordeal, just the beginning. The 67-year-old eventually shifting from the waiting area to a temporary bed meant for short stay, emergency treatment only, forced to remain inside the ED for 3 days because she says doctors told her the respiratory ward had no beds left.
And I wasn't the only one.
And tonight, a warning from a whistleblower who treats patients on the Westmead front line. Nine News is concealing their identity to protect their job.
I feel like now, when you're preparing for a shift, that it is almost preparing for a battle.
What's at stake here?
People's lives are at stake.
Claims our city's biggest hospital is overcrowded and struggling.
We're not providing the care to patients that we would hold for ourselves or our relatives. I don't want to have to look another patient's relative in the eye and say they have died in our waiting room. They have died because the emergency department is so overcrowded that patients that we have already seen have not moved on and we can't treat new patients.
This leaked snapshot shows Westmead Emergency's own record of patient length of stay on one weekday in May. 21 patients still there after more than 20 hours, one of them for nearly 2 days. That same patient's already been waiting 41 hours to be shifted to a hospital ward.
There's simply nowhere for those new patients to go to be seen. You know that you're going to be providing substandard care in a corridor. You're going to be trying to resuscitate very sick people in a space that's not designed to be used for that.
The state government believes 25 planned urgent care clinics will help, but Westmead staff say that's not treating the problem. The issue hospital-wide, where to put patients being admitted.
Without a doubt, they should be treated in appropriate treatment spaces.
And tonight, more serious claims from inside the hospital that with Westmead's $1.1 billion revamp has come an overall reduction in beds.
Is this?
They spent $1 billion plus and they have fewer beds now. What's wrong with that picture?
Standard of hospitalisation that we have in Australia.
Western Sydney LHD has tonight apologised, saying Westmead's experienced high volumes in recent months. In the last year, it's hired 20 more nurses and 5 senior doctors.
The $1.1 billion got them 5 doctors and 20 more nurses and fewer beds. Corruption everywhere.
Is the light focus on making sure...
It's a government hack, the health minister.
Got adequately staffed hospitals is what my main priority will be. Clearly, we need to do better.
One day, this could be you.
At Westmead, Ruth Wynne-Williams, Nine News.
All right, the last statement. And one day, this could be you, said the disguised voice. I hope you could understand that well enough. So there you go. It's happening here. It's happening there. It's happening everywhere. Hospitals are being packed with people who, I wonder if they even ask them, how many shots have you had? Don't know.
Well, right, at this point, does it matter?
No, it doesn't. It's too late. Nearly 7 billion people injected, and people are still getting these shots, and they're getting ready to roll out a new booster.
Yes, they are.
The Arcturus booster. So this is not going to stop until they gain what they want, and that's a lot fewer people. All right, the next year and a half plus are going to be very difficult. I don't know how else to read it. I hope I'm wrong. I don't see it. Babies. Let's jump to this one. Babies and infants. Alarming, unusual surge in severe myocarditis cases hits newborns and infants in the UK. All right, let's see what this is all about.
There are some other myocarditis-related news developments that I believe are really worth highlighting. For instance, several weeks ago, the WHO issued a warning regarding a quote-unquote unusual surge of myocarditis cases in babies that were born within the United Kingdom. Specifically, on May 17th, the WHO released this statement here, you can see it up on your screen, warning the public about the rising number of quote-unquote severe myocarditis cases in both newborns as well as infants. Here's part of what this alert said, quote, between June 2022 and April 2023, 10 babies under 28 days of age presented with symptoms of myocarditis at a tertiary hospital in South Wales and tested positive for enterovirus on PCR testing. 7 babies were treated in intensive care, and 1 died before transfer to tertiary care. 1 infant is still being treated in the hospital. Furthermore, the alert from the WHO actually contained a small update in regards to the status of these babies. Quote, in all cases alive at presentation, myocarditis was a presenting feature. As of April 20th, 2023, 3 patients were hospitalized, 4 patients were being managed as outpatients, and 2 had died. Then, in terms of how dramatic this increase in the number of myocarditis cases was in babies, well, here's what this report said. Quote, in the same hospital covering the South Wales region, over the previous 6 years, only 1 other similar case has been identified. Over the past 6 years, they had 1 case, but in the span of 9 months, there were 10 cases in that one hospital in South Wales. Now, I know what you're thinking at this point. What could have possibly led to this increase in myocarditis cases in babies during the years 2022 to 2023? Could it have anything to do with the large-scale push to get everyone in the country, including pregnant women, fully vaccinated?
Well, there's your answer right there. Well, Mrs. Jones, how many shots have you had before you gave birth to this child? Are they asking that question? Don't know.
One of the first comments under that video is interesting. Do you see it?
Let me jump down there real quick. Yeah, I see it. Okay. Mr. Pinson, Aaron Pinson. Heart conditions are just one of the many results of the death jab. My friend, while 7 months pregnant with her son, got the vaccine. Her son couldn't walk or talk for an entire year. He's 3 now and constantly sick and can speak very little. His life is, in all likelihood, destroyed. Vaccines are bad enough, but add an experimental one that failed all its test phases, and you've got a disaster of epic proportions. I tried warning my friend of the risks and potential dangers, but by then she'd drunk the Fauci cocktail and let fear control her actions. I wonder if she and other mothers realize what the cause of their child's illness is, and if they'll ever openly acknowledge that it was the jab. Hindsight is 20/20, but regret won't make those babies and kids whole and healthy ever again. All true.
Yeah, I we don't even know what's coming with regard to these babies that were born to these mothers. Did they say that 65% of pregnant mothers took the jab, at least one dose? Whenever they tally that number up, I don't know if it was the last year or 2 years.
I think it was 75. I think it was 75.
Wow. That's significant. And we have no idea.
Oh, that's huge. Huge.
You know, the child may look fine.
I can't. Of course. How do you know when the baby's 3 months old what's going to happen?
Right.
This one's 3 years old now. Can't walk. Constantly sick. Can speak very little. Couldn't walk or talk for a year. This is it's infanticide. And I don't know how, as a mother, I could live with myself knowing I had done this to my child. Out of fear, out of ignorance, out of coercion, out of mandates, I don't know, whatever, peer pressure. But how could you live with yourself? I don't know. That's
well, probably you rationalize and then you can find you other explanations for why this child is not thriving.
You'd have to, yeah. Okay, moving right along here, we always have as much as we can for you. Stevens-Johnson syndrome. Stevens-Johnson syndrome. What's going on there? It's another story. Sevenfold increase in the number of Stevens-Johnson syndrome people.
Well, that's a nasty one. That's a skin reaction to, usually it's a medication of some sort or injection. But we saw the first cases of that shortly after the vax were rolled out. There were several. It's really horrifying to look at. The person's skin starts off as a rash, and then it gets very angry looking, and it can cover the whole body or much of the body.
It looks worse than shingles. It's that bad.
Yeah. You have to, I think, go into a burn unit to have it properly treated.
No, it's horrible. Stevens-Johnson, you can look it up. Stevens, Stevens-Johnson, and look at the pictures. You'll see.
I know somebody came into the shedding group last week with a picture that looked like they were going in that direction. And this was an unvaxxed person, oddly enough, but had been having extensive contact with the vaxxed. And it looked like the start of Stevens-Johnson syndrome.
Oh, there's a sevenfold, 700% increase, okay, in the number of people showing up. And they're all vaxxed, of course. They did go far enough with that research to figure that out. All right, let's, we have just about, no, 9, 10 minutes. Let's run over to our human file and look at some of these chronicle. They're certainly anecdotal, but they're awfully difficult to dismiss. All right, where do we want to go?
Should we do some of these iron ones? And these are really
go ahead. They're
stunning.
They're frightful. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, here's the first one. This is from a young woman. When do you know if you need emergent help? I've been severely anemic for over a year now. I've had 14 iron infusions since December. My levels are lower than they were before I started on infusions. I'm going to have surgery in late August to fix what's causing the bleeding, but I'm not sure what to do until then. I feel worse. I live in a tiny Cape Cod, and I cannot walk from the bathroom to the kitchen without taking a break. My skin is yellow. My tongue hurts. I get dizzy, short of breath, tachycardia, exhaustion, chest pain, joint pain. My eye is twitching. My anxiety, depression, and OCD are so bad right now. Like, when do I know when it's bad enough to get additional help? The day I start fainting or can't get out of bed? Will it be too late by then? So 14 iron infusions within the past 7 months, and it's not doing a lick of good.
Who's doing all these infusions? Well, I don't get it. Where is this happening? Hospitals? I don't know.
Yeah, you would have to go to a medical center to get them, yes. But it's not the answer to her problem. And I would ask, how many shots?
Sounds like she's got liver issues, and she's yellow, and that doesn't sound like an iron.
Well, you know, when you're getting overloaded with iron, it's packing the liver.
Loading it.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, you can have liver issues from this. In fact, that's one of the first signs.
Wow.
So she might have been toxifying herself with these iron infusions.
Don't know. All right, here's the next one. I'll do half of this one. It's a long one. I read someone's post about a reaction to their second iron infusion. My answer was so long, I made it its own post. This is a long post, but maybe it can help someone. Or maybe someone can help me. LOL. I had infusions 15 years ago and did well. I got a headache, etc., and just stayed in bed for a couple of days. I felt so much better afterwards. I had my life back. I had two rounds of 4 and 9 months apart and thought they went well. This year, I was feeling all the crazy symptoms again and fought to get infusions. The first one went well. They used the same iron at my request because I am so sensitive and thought it would be safe. At the previous clinic, they used a big bag of saline, and I was there all afternoon. This year, a new place, and they informed me that the small bag, over an hour, is how it should be done. I felt okay. I had some chest tightness for a couple of days and thought I was doing well. I went in for a second one. What's with these people? A second one, and as soon as the iron hit my blood, the room was spinning and my blood pressure went through the roof. They stopped it, and I felt better. Is there a lesson there somewhere? They determined it was probably just anxiety. I finished the infusion and felt fine. I went home, ate, showered, and felt good. Go ahead.
Later that night, in bed, relaxing, I felt incredibly unwell. My blood pressure was dropping. After that, I felt unwell every other day and got scared while driving because I felt like I was going to pass out.
Oh, no.
It seemed like low sodium or sugar, so I would pull over and eat snacks. Then I went out to lunch a few weeks ago and ended up going to the ER with tachycardia, which was new to me. They gave me a beta blocker. I had an allergic reaction to that, and then also the stickers for a heart monitor at the cardiologist. Now I have become allergic to almost all the foods I would usually eat. My digestive tract is a mess, and I have lost 10 pounds. I think the second iron infusion was the catalyst to it all. I wish I would have fought for a slower infusion or not done it at all. Though it helped me in the past, and I desperately needed iron. I cannot take Benadryl or prednisone, which is what they usually give for an allergic reaction. I sit here with hives and swollen lips because I dared eat a carrot. And now I have a swollen thyroid as well. I suspect I have had histamine intolerance or MCAS, that's mast cell activation syndrome, for years, but this is new. I think it is a whole system allergic reaction that is trapped in my body, if that makes sense. Has anyone else experienced something like this? How many shots?
I assume that this iron group is not discussing shots.
No, that is forbidden. Then they tell you that when you go in. You can't, or the group gets shut down. But, you know, usually if you want to get around that, there's code names for referring to, well, the offending agent.
Right.
Just for the record, though, I mean, the virus can cause these things, too. But I, you know, given that this group has literally exploded within the last 2 years, I mean, 5,000 new people within a week, I suspect that's probably the result of the damage that these injections have done to people and their ability to regulate the levels of iron in their body.
Right. They're flailing around now thinking it's some kind of an iron irregularity without looking at the cause.
Right. And as I said, iron...
How many red blood cells have been ruined and the iron kicked off? Yep.
Let's move on to the next one. It's actually go down number
I've
five.
Yeah, I skipped that one.
Yeah, number five.
All right, let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4. Number five. Okay. This is a graph, a chart.
There's a one-liner up top.
Can anyone help me with this? Doing a stool and urine sample, and I just think cancer. All right. Take it.
Okay, that's from a gentleman, and a woman answers. You're not alone. I am sitting here thinking I have cancer, too. I'm waiting for an appointment to see a gastro specialist for a colonoscopy. It's normal to worry. I'm trying to listen to patients' meditation videos on YouTube to help me get through all this waiting. Mm-hmm. I keep repeating this David Allen quote to myself as I wait. Patience is the calm acceptance that things can happen in a different order than the one you have in mind. I don't do medications, but strangely enough, in this instance, it has helped ease my mind. And the original poster replies, I don't get it, though. I'm new to all this, and I've never even heard of hemoglobin. I have bloods probably 2 to 3 times a year, and I had some in March, and I was told to repeat in 4 months. Surely this would have been picked up earlier. I've been given folate and an iron tablet. I'm active and healthy, I think, so I don't know what's going on, really. Could be nothing, obviously, but my mind doesn't work that way.
I wonder if he even knows what day of the week it is. I'm sorry, this guy, if you don't know as an adult what hemoglobin is, please.
Well, he's going to find out what hemoglobin is.
This is not good. All right, the last one. What are you meant to do when you have an infection? Do you stop the iron tablets while you're on antibiotics? I'm just worried because I keep getting sick. I've been on antibiotics more than I haven't been on them this year. And it feels like I feel like when I take iron at the same time, it's like they don't work at all. But I also keep coming down with a chest infection a week after I stopped the antibiotics. And now I'm feeling like I have low iron again, and I'm not sure what I should be doing. These people are so lost and so misdirected, if they're directed at all. What hope is there for these people? That's why I keep saying, you may not see people dropping dead when you're out and about, but we're reading stories from people who still are out and about, and look what they're dealing with.
I know.
How many shots have they had?
Well, that's a real quandary because, you know, the iron will feed infections. And that's why your body is activating that defense, the iron withholding defense. It's trying to keep iron away from pathogens. And then, when you take it, you're feeding those pathogens.
Yeah. This is all getting into loopy land. I have no idea what hemoglobin is, he says. I'm not knocking him. I'm just saying that you go up to the average person on the street and ask them to define hemoglobin, I'll bet no more than 5% could do it.
No, I know.
They probably don't even know where their kidneys are. They don't know. They don't know where their liver is. Oh, they could point to their chest and be close. This is all just very disheartening. But again, you're supposed to learn about this, aren't you, in junior high school biology? Certainly high school biology. Aren't you supposed to learn about the human body?
Well, we used to. I don't know what they've been teaching the last 10, 20 years. Do you?
No, they're teaching LGBTQ+ rights, tranny rights.
That's about it.
Identifying as a kitty and bring your own cat box for the bathroom. I don't know. It's awful. Sad. All right, I think that's about it. Anything you want to add real quick here?
No. That should do it.
Okay. That's another hour packed. We try to bring you as much information as we can each hour. And do share these programs. Listen to them twice if you need to. Here's the big one, though. Antibodies are mirror spike protein production in your done by and created by your own immunological system. Isn't that nice? And they knew
a
about
bonus.
This. Yeah. All right. Good night, young lady. Thank you. Talk soon.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Okay. Have a good night, everyone.
All right, gang. We'll be right back with another hour for you. Stay right there.